Baruchim Abayim B'Shem Hashem. Welcome to the Harry H. Barron Ask OU Outreach Kashrus Shiurim. When Rabbi Kraus Shlita from the Passaic Community, Clifton Community College, asked me to organize a shiur on medications on Pesach, so my thought right away went to two individuals in the OU who are probably the biggest experts in the OU on medications, and they both happen to live in Passaic. So they're Shcheinim Tovim. They're right here. We don't have to import anybody from outside. And Baruch Hashem, they both accepted to represent the OU at this Chashuv HaKashrus Shiur. So Rabbi Eli Gersten Shlita will begin by giving the halachic basis and underpinnings for the Psukim of the OU Poskim. He works on a daily basis with the OU Poskim. He's the Safra, the Dina. He writes down the Psukim on any subject. If there's a certain subject that you need clarification on, with a push of a button, we have immediate access to any tshuva of the thousands of tshuvas that the OU Poskim have written on various subjects. So he'll give a shiur, and then we will follow that with questions and answers that we've received the questions at the OU, things that consumers are concerned about concerning medications and cosmetics for Pesach. Rabbi Gavriel Price, who is a rabbinic coordinator and group leader at the OU, he's involved on a daily basis in research, ingredient research, and in order for the Poskim to give the Psak, they have to know what the Metzius is. So Rabbi Price's job is to find out exactly what the Metzius is, and then the OU Poskim can render their Psak. It's a great covet for me to introduce Rabbi Eli Gersten, who will give the shiur. We also handed out these booklets from OU Guide. If anybody doesn't have one, there's on the Bima. We have plenty here. Also, if you have any questions, please write down your question on the index card. We'll try to address it today. If we don't, if you put down your email or fax number, then we can contact you from the OU in case we don't cover your question here at the shiur. Rabbi Gersten.
Rabbi Kraus and Rabbi Grossman and the whole Chashuv Kehillah. I was asked to speak about on the topic of medicines, and other cosmetics, other items such as that. Let me start with the topic of medicines. If you look in the OU guide that was given out, so there's one of the pages where it discusses the guidelines for medicines. Okay, page 101. So what I'm going to be speaking about has to do with these guidelines and to explain the OU position, which is based on the Psukim of Rav Belsky and Rav Schechter. And I was asked also to give some background information about it and other opinions. So I'll try to, expound on the issue. In order to, the first paragraph over there on page 101, it says that known and tested medications in the forms of creams, non-chewable pills, injections may be owned and used and consumed on Pesach. A very blanket heter for pills to be taken on Pesach. Now what this is based on is the following, we'll call them the following two assumptions. And the truth is, these they're not assumptions only made by Rebelsky or Schechter. It's really Ramosha in Igros Moshe also makes these same assumptions about the way pills work. If you want to look it up, it's in Igros Moshe and Chaim Beis and Tzadi Beis. He has a truth about this, and he assumes over there that pills fall under the category of Chorchai Kaidim Zmanai, that once you take chametz before Pesach and you make it nifsul me'achila, you make it inedible, then it loses its status of chametz, and it becomes mutter on Pesach. Lashon of Ramesha is Kfar Nispatel Lefnei HaPesach Mishem Eichel. He's talking over there about some pill that someone needed to take. He says it's already loses its status. The second assumption you have to make is that there's no achshavei by medicines. So Ramesha says that there's no such thing as, there's no achshavei by a medicine that's taken for refuah. And he gives the explanation. Achshavei means that when you eat something on Pesach, even if it's nifsal me'achilo, so the shita of the Rosh is, and that's the way we hold, that by eating it, you are machshavid a meichel. You consider, you're making it into a food. That even if I take something which itself is nifsal me'achilo, it's rotten, it's spoiled. So really, technically speaking, it's not chametz stick. I'm allowed to own it, I'm allowed to use it on Pesach. But if I eat it, that by eating it, I'm showing that it's really, in fact, a food. And by doing so, I've given it back its elevated status of being chametz, and therefore it is usher to do so. That isser is an isser d'rabbanan, but nevertheless, it's still usher to do so. You can't eat even a spoiled piece of chametz. You can't eat it on Pesach. That's the rosh. It's brought in beginning of Kol Shel. So Moshe writes, "Da'af dvarim morim u'musim naitlim l'refua." A person would eat even disgusting things if that's what it needed to take in order to get his, in order for him to be cured. If a person's sick enough and he's desperate enough, they'll do anything. So they'll, if you give them something very, very disgusting, they would still take it. So therefore, he says, how can you apply the term achshavei? Achshavei means that by eating it, I've shown that I consider this to be a food. But here it's not I consider it food. I consider this thing to be disgusting. I'm like everybody else. I don't think this thing is a food, so why am I eating it? I'm eating it because I need it for my refuah. Now, Ramesh is not the first to say this svara either. In the Shulchan Aruch, on the page of the Shulchan Aruch, the Yad Avram brings the same svara. He says that by things for refuah, this is in Simen Kuf Nun Hey, where it deals with the halachas of taking medicines that are using Yisurim for refuah. Here he also says the same svara. There's no such thing as achshavei when it comes to refuah. So once you have these two assumptions, that the chametz is nifsal before Pesach, and that there's no achshavei, so then you could take any pill. And that's basically the basis of this first paragraph over here. And that's why the OU doesn't make lists of medicines, which pills are which, and a lot of the other, some other organizations make, or groups come out with different lists of medicines. And according to this, there's really no need to do so. Okay, so why do some do it? So there are those who disagree with this position of Ramesha. And both of these points are issues of question. But that's the way. So in terms of OU policy, OU psak, that's the psak of Rebelsky, Shachter, is to follow this halacha, like Ramesha writes, that all pills would fall into this category. They're not a problem. However, for instance, Rosh Shlomo Zalman questions the issue of are pills really considered nifsal me'achila? So he has a tshuva also. This is in Chelek Aleph Simeon Zayin. He says, true, if I were to take one of these pills and I were to chew it, it would be disgusting. I would probably spit it out. I wouldn't be able to eat it. But he says, maybe that's b'nei she'anachnu mufunakim. We're very picky people about what we eat. We live in a society that's very, very delicate. If things aren't exactly right already, it begins to, doesn't sit well with us. He gives an example. He says, Meiraglayim. Who would consider that to be something that's roi l'achila? And yet, it's halachically, it's considered a mashke, which means that it has to be considered roi l'achila. It's, in order for it to be machshir, in order for it to be machshir l'kabel tumah, you need to be a mashke which is roi l'achila. And yet the Rambam lists, there's a whole list, I don't have to go through them all, but he lists things which we would definitely consider to be nifsal. We would think that these things are for sure have lost their status of being food, or they never were food, and yet the Rambam counts them as things which are machshir l'kabel tumah. And the rule is that in order for something to be machshir l'kabel tumah, it has to be a roi l'achila. So one could question, once you have that as your barometer of what's considered to be royal achil, it's very hard to say that I know for sure. He doesn't say that means that the pills are not. He just says, you have to be very careful. Who's to say exactly what is the standard by which we're going to decide whether a pill is considered nifsal me'achila? So he questions this whole idea. So that's one strong question on it. The other issue is, do you say, is it true that you don't say achshavei by medicines? So true, we said the Ramosha held that you don't, and that's also the opinion of the Yad Avram. However, the Shagas Aryeh, for instance, he writes that there is achshavei by medicines too. Anything that you put into your mouth, no matter what the reason is, says he explicitly, even if you're putting it in even medicines, even if it's done only for refuah purposes, he says there's achshavei. Okay, so that's perhaps a reason why someone would want to be machmer. This was also the opinion historically of Rav Henkin. He held that there is achshavei by medicines. So those who are machmer, based on that, and they wanted to only have medicines that have no chametz in them whatsoever. Okay, this is a so there's a hider, there's a chumrah to find medicines that have no chametz in them. But again, if it's a medicine that a person is going to need, it's brought in the guidelines too. If you can find an equally effective chametz-free alternative that's in the second paragraph is available, so then this should be used instead. And that's taking into consideration that there are reasons to be machmer over here. However, generally speaking, if a person, it's difficult to do so, one can't, when doctor says that this is what they need, whatever the case is, once changing medicines in midstream is not always a simple thing to do. So then, definitely one has what to be Saimachan to be in terms of being Mekel. This whole issue with the Shagas Aryeh is a whole question of itself. The Shach seems to hold not like him in Simon Kuf Nun Hay, and the Rikiv Eger brings that the Shagas Aryeh seems to disagree. So it's not clear how we pass. So even on the page of the Shulchan Aruch, it's not so clear what the maskana is. It seems to be a machlokes. Perhaps you could say it's machlokes Shach and Shagas Aryeh on this point. Which gets into a whole shir in Hilchas Yom Kippur about eating things which are nifsal. We're going to try to avoid that. There's another approach taken though to why medicines might be okay, and this is so aside from the two reasons we mentioned until now, the two assumptions we have until. There's Rav Shlomo Zalman himself says that it could be that medicines are okay to take, that these pills. He offers another approach. He says that taking a pill is considered shaloi kederach ha'nasai. So this is another hatter. Loi kederach ha'nasai means if I take something in a different way than normally is eaten. So nifsal mechila means that the food loses its status of food. That's one hatter. The other heter is if I do it in an abnormal manner. For instance, if you eat chelev chai, if I take a raw piece of fat, which is not normal to eat it that way. You can't say that the chelev is nifsal me'achila. It's not nifsal. It's a good piece of fat. A person will cook it up and eat it. It's delicious. But he's eating it in an abnormal way. The normal way to eat it is only cooked, and he's eating it raw. There's a discussion about whether when you swallow things, a person swallows without chewing, is that considered an abnormal way of eating? That's a discussion brought in the Piskei Tshuva in Simen Kuf Nun Hei as well. And there he brings the two opinions. The Toras Chaim says that swallowing things is considered to be a Shaloi Kederach HaNasai. That's considered an abnormal way of eating things. Like most people, when they eat something, they chew it up and then they swallow it. They don't just take it whole and swallow it whole. However, the Noidi Bihuda disagrees, and that's really the way we pass it, like the Noidi Bihuda, that it's not considered to be an abnormal way to just swallow things. There's a Mefurisha Gemara that they bring as a raya, that the Gemara says, Bolo matzah yotza. If a person swallows a piece of matzah without chewing it, he's yotza is mitzvah matzah. If a person were to eat matzah without swallowing it, so, if he did something in an abnormal way, he wouldn't be yotza is mitzvah. So you see that swallowing it is not considered to be abnormal. That's the raya that's brought. And Shlomo Zalman himself admits that swallowing things is not considered to be shaloi kederach ha'nasai. You can't just say, because I swallowed a pill. He says, we paskin like the Noidi Bihuda, that swallowing things itself does not make it shaloi kederach ha'nasai. But he says that, but still, he thinks that swallowing pills, specifically medicines, is considered to be shaloi kederach ha'nasai. He says there's a difference. reading his lashon, he says dafka oichol gomer. He says if a person eats a regular food, let's say he takes a cookie or something, takes a bite of cookie, oichol gomer shregilin lilais. It's the derech to normally is to chew it up and then eat it. Lilais v'lechol. It's the derech to chew and eat. Rak azam rinan shegam b'liya chashiv kederech achilas. In such a case, if I take the whole cookie, I put it in my mouth, I swallow it down whole, that's also considered to be that I ate a normal way of eating. The fact that I need to chew it, that's just, you know, makes it easier, but it's that's still considered an achila. He says, mashayki b'davar d'loi chazi klal achila v'oimid rak l'b'loya, something which is not intended for eating. It's not, it's really the only way you could eat it is by swallowing it, such as these pills. The gam rak lechaylim, and they're only intended for people who are sickly, kamoi glulis nizan, like the pills that we're discussing over here. Shaper chashiv lekuli al mashloik derech achila, v'tishri lechalishem basakamim. So Shlomo Zalman says that a pill has a different heter, since it's not intended to be eaten. So on such a food, if you swallow it whole, he thinks that that's considered shloik derech achila. It's not exactly clear in the understanding of this svara what exactly the chiluk is. It's a little bit hard to hear, but that's his svara. The difficulty is the Har Tzvi actually speaks this out. He's not speaking keneged Shlomo Zalman, but he has the same question, and he has it as a chakira, and he says maybe pumfakert, something which is not the derech to chew, it's only the derech to swallow. So then how can you say swallowing it is considered shloik derech achila? That's the only way it's eaten. So you can really hear it both ways. You know, you could say, on the one hand, well, you know, this is something which is the derech to eat. Okay, so you could say it's, you know, if I eat it, you could say, like Rosh Shlomo Zalman saying, if something is derech to eat, so chewing or it's not chewing, it doesn't make a difference. But something which is not the derech to eat, so then if I don't chew it, that's considered, it's a little, okay, I'm not going to, But that's what Shlomo Zalman's svara why he's mekel. Again, one could be mefakfik on it. So if that's alone what you're going to be mekel with, it's not so pashut. But again, it could be a tziruf. So again, when a person's taking medicines, pashut is their nifsel mechila, right? Notwithstanding Shlomo Zalman's objection, we could assume that medicines are nifsel mechila. We could assume that, and we could be, and base, we could assume that there's no achshavei, and then we could add on that perhaps it's also the manner in which a pill is taken is considered an abnormal manner, and therefore it's also shalai kederech achilasai. Right, shalai kederech achilasai vanasai, and that would be permitted. There is another tzad lahakel, which is brought by the Har Tzvi himself, discusses another reason over here why perhaps medicines you could be mekel. He says that medicines are the amount of iser you have in a medicine is a chatzi shir. We don't have a full amount of a person's not swallowing, usually a pill is not a kezias, it's not a it's much less. The amount of chametz that would be in there would even be, if there would be any chametz or whatever the other issue would be inside the pill is obviously much, much less. But of course we know that chatzishir is not itself a heter. Chatzishir also min ha-tayra. So if a person's taking something which is also min ha-tayra, even to take a chatzishir of it is also asr as well. And not only is it asr, if it's an isur tayra, you wouldn't get malchus for it. If a person ate a chatzishir of chalev, they wouldn't get malchus, but there's still an iser. It's an iser deraisa to eat a chatzishir, to eat a half an amount, to eat less than a kezias. But he brings, it's a Beis Yosef in Hilchos Yom Kippurim that says if you eat a chatzishir of something which is chatzishir shaloi kederech hana'asai, so then there's no iser at all. That's what the Beis Yosef writes over there. That he has a machlokes between two rishonim, between the Rav Yoh and the Rambam, and he tries to make peace between the two by coming up with this sort of a pshara that everybody would agree that if it's a chatzishir of something which is nifsel, it's shloi kederech hanasai. It's not clear, somewhere in the middle there, some sort of. The idea being, this is the way the Har Tzvi explains, is that the reason why Chati Shir is also Mina Torah is because it's Chazi Litzterufi. You could eat another shear of it. If I eat half a piece of chalev, half a kezias, I could eat another half a kezias. So therefore, Mina Torah, it's also to eat even that half a kezias of chalev. But if you have something which I can never eat the second half of kezias, either because it's too, you know, putrid. I the amount of time it would take me to eat it, it would take me too so long to eat the thing. Then it's not chazi litz derufi. They talk about drinking. Let's say chaimitz chai. I'm going to drink straight strong chaimitz vinegar. So a person can't drink a revius of vinegar straight. Maybe he could sip it slowly. Maybe he could. It will take him longer than the shear of his man. That it's possible to, let's say Yom Kippur, more than the time it'll take to drink a moly lugmov, this man will already pass. It's not possible to drink it all down quickly. So in such a case, then there wouldn't be an iser of chati shir as well, because it's not chazi l'strufi. So the Har Tzvi wants to apply it as well to these medicines. Say the medicines, since either either they're too bitter and you can't eat a full shear of them, or because it's it's dangerous. It could hurt a person if they eat such an amount. So you have another svara over here. Something which is chati shir, which is not chazi l'tzerufi. That itself is a svara to be makel. Again, there are those that disagree with this. He brings himself. It's not a pashut svara, but again, it's another tziruf to what we've discussed. Be another reason why one could be makel to take pills on Pesach. And on top of all this, it's not clear that there's any chametz in these pills at all. You know, one could perhaps try figuring out what's in them. There's a good chance that there might not be any chametz in them to begin with. So we're dealing with sfeikus on top of all these tzirufim. So there's very good reason to be makel to take pills on Pesach without any questions asked. Just what everyone has in their medicine chest is fine. Now, when it comes to vitamins, though, we lose a lot of the svaras that we've just discussed, because one of the main svaras we talked about was this idea of achshavei, that there's no achshavei by a medicine. A person wouldn't take a medicine a person would take a medicine even if it were to taste disgusting. Would a person take a vitamin if it tasted disgusting? It depends. Again, if the person is very, very sickly and they need these vitamins, and okay, so then a vitamin is really like a medicine. There's really no difference. Well, because we call it a vitamin because over the counter versus prescription, that doesn't make a difference. The point is, if a person really, really needs it, if they're willing to, if they be sort of moiser nefesh to take this medicine, this vitamin, so then the same would apply. But if a person would be finicky about the vitamins that they take, they say, oh, I don't like this vitamin, it bothers me, it doesn't taste good, I buy this other type of vitamin, it tastes much better. So then you've lost out on the heter of achshavei, and then that itself could be a problem. There are those who would say that, that's basically what it comes down to. It's brought over here in these guidelines that when it comes to vitamins, there are different opinions about it. Really, this is what it comes down to. Rebelsky says that he had heard from Ramesha that Ramesha was supik about vitamins. Probably, he didn't give a definitive. When it comes to medicines, Ramesha was clear that medicines are fine. When it comes to vitamins, he said he wasn't sure how to categorize that. It's this question: why is a person taking the vitamin? What exactly is their need for it? How much would they be mice and nefesh for? So it's hard to say. You can't just give a blanket heter and say vitamins are not a problem. When it comes to what about creams and ointments and things like that? So that was also mentioned in the first paragraph here. Known and tested medications in the form of creams, right, are fine as well. So this is based on a tshuva also from Ramesha. This is an Igros Moshe Rechaim Gimel Simon Samach Beis, where he was asked about a person who had a cream that they needed to take on Pesach. And the question is, there might be alcohol in the cream, and maybe the alcohol was chametz stick, and maybe it should be an issue of sicha kishtia, that even though A person isn't going to ingest it, obviously, but they're going to get, but we know, sikha, there's a din, sikha kashtiya. If I rub an ointment on my skin, so that's also like a person drank it. It's brought in Hilchas Yom Kippurim. So first of all, says, first of all, you should know, sikha kashtiya is only a din d'rabbanan. It's midaraisa, a person's only over if they actually eat or drink chametz. Okay, it's a din d'rabbanan. And then he says there are shitas in the Rishonim that say that sikha kashtiya only applies to shemen. It doesn't apply to other items. It's based on the pasuk, right? They learn out that like shemen to the basar. It's maybe only by Yom Kippur too. Could be Rav Moshe talks about that in the Tshuva as well. Then he brings a Machane Ephraim, though. This is important. And the Machane Ephraim says that you only say Sicha Kishtiya Dafka if it's a Sicha Shel Tainuk. If it's something that you enjoy, like a moisturizer or something that, helps your skin and makes you feel, your skin feel good. But a medicine, it's not a Tainuk, the medicine. It heals the rash, it heals the whatever the issue is, but the medicine itself is not something that is that feels good. It's a tainug for your skin. So therefore, he says there's no issue of sikha kashtiya when it comes to ointments. What about the tzad that it should be also b'hana? Okay, good. It's not sikha kashtiya, so I didn't eat. It's not like I ate it, but I'm getting hana from it. I'm getting hana from this ointments. Why is that permitted? So he says no, since it's kibbutz ain't a meichel adam. It's mutar b'hana. Again, he assumes that in this ointment, it's nifsal me'achila. It's going to be like harchay kadam zmanay. He says that you should buy it before Pesach though, because otherwise the alcohol might have been fit for achila kaidim Pesach, and then it doesn't help you if you mix it in on Pesach. And he says there's a discussion. What if you get it from a non-Jew? Is that okay? Okay, but it'd be better to buy such an ointment before Pesach. However, the truth is, probably Rabbi Price will speak about, I'm sure it'll come up, that the alcohols today are kamat, at least in America, they're kamat all corn-based alcohol. So the chashus of alcohol, b'chlal, of it being chametz stick is very remote to begin with. Or it's other types of alcohol. One type of alcohol is ethyl alcohol, which is the ethanol, which is which could be the chametz stick type, but as we know, if you all go to fill up a gas station, it says ethanol. How much percent? We all know that it's all corn. That's what America runs on corn. So again, when it comes to these ointments and things, especially it's for medicinal use, it's not a problem. There's no need to be. There's really very very small, almost no concern. Now, that's all when it comes to the first half. This is the pills and the, things that are nifsal. But when it comes to liquid medicines, so that's a whole nother page. Liquid medicines, the truth is, it's not just a Pesach issue. It's an all-year-round issue because a lot of the liquid medicines have in them glycerin, and glycerin can very easily come from animal products. Glycerin is an oil derivative, and it can come from animal fat. It can be made from. So, in fact, there's certain widely known medicines that are known to use animal fat at this point, animal glycerin, the Tylenol and liquid Tylenol, the liquid Motrin. So that's a year-round problem as well. The one thing that we could, the one harvacha that we could give over here is that the OU has researched the triaminic fever reducer with the acetaminophen version, and that one is fine for Pesach. It's fine all year, of course. It has the OU on it, and it also is fine for Pesach. It's a children's triaminic fever reducer. There are also certain cough medicines that they make, which are also fine. The ones that do not contain maltitol are the ones that are fine for Pesach. The ones that do contain maltitol, so then one should avoid those, or ask a rabbi if there's a big need for them. But those preferably should be avoided. You know, I know people ask Rybelski all the time, what about ibuprofen, you know, Motrin, things like that. You know, what is a person supposed to do? There's no kosher version. There's certainly no kosher LePesach version. He says, well, if the kid is running a fever of, 103, 104, that's a Chaylish Yesh B'Sakana anyway, so you can give it to them. That's usually why, you know, that's when the Motrins are most effective for bringing down very high fevers. So he says, if you have no braver, that's a Chaylish Yesh B'Sakana that you could do. But otherwise, liquid medicines, so all year round, what we tell people at the OU to do, people call me, you know, this is what we recommend, is that if you have to give these type of medicines, you should dilute them. We know how much glycerin is in them, so if you dilute a teaspoon of medicine into 1.5 ounces of water, it'll become the amount of glycerin will be bottled b'shishim. For Pesach, it doesn't help to dilute if it already has chametz in it. You can't dilute chametz on Pesach. If you diluted it before Pesach, though, it would help. I'm not telling people that they should do that. I don't know what happens if you dilute it in advance. You can speak to a pharmacist to find out. I just don't know. Still more time? Okay, so I'm really done with the issue of medicines. I just wanted to go on to a few other things which are related based on the rules that we described over here. So if you look in the list, it's actually on a different page. This is on the guideline for medicines, but turning from for medicines to this another page, non-food items on page 105. So the OU gives a list of things that they, again, don't consider to be an issue. If you want to buy them kosher LePesach, again, it would be maybe it's a chumrah, a hiddur to do so, but mi'ikar adin, these items are not an issue. So, for instance, deodorants are on this list. It's a little bit hard to find because they put them for some reason in the third paragraph, third column, but it's a little bit out of order. But again, the question people ask about deodorants is that they contain alcohol. When it comes to these non-food items, another consideration, something that person has to keep in mind, is that when they use alcohol, they use something called denatured alcohol. In a food item, you don't put in denatured alcohol because you'll ruin your food. In a medicine, if there's alcohol, it most likely is not denatured. But in a inedible item, such as the ones listed over here, the alcohols are all denatured. The reason they denature it is one very simple reason, because then they don't have to pay taxes on it, and it's a lot of money. So they all do it. It's a leuplug by the in the world out there. Again, the alcohols that they use are, if the product is made in America, it's over 90% chance that it's made from corn. It wouldn't be a chametz stick issue anyway. Even if it is chametz stick, it's denatured, and the denaturing makes it nifsel me'achilo. That's why it's called denatured. So that's really the most of the items on this list that, you know, that contain, the items that are here that would contain alcohol would fit into this category. The few items here which are listed on the bottom, which say over there you should ask your rabbinical authorities disagree, are items that are going to end up getting into one's mouth. So toothpaste, mouthwash, lipstick, things which... So this gets back to the question of achshavei that we discussed at the beginning. Would a person use a toothpaste that tasted disgusting? So most likely not. It doesn't necessarily fall into the same category as even as the vitamins that we discussed earlier. The only tzad l'hakel is because a person doesn't intend on eating it. They intend on spitting it all out. However, as we all know, a person doesn't get it all out of their mouth, and they usually leave a film of toothpaste behind in their mouth, and it gives a nice, clean, scent in their mouth. So that's a question whether there is considered, even if we consider the toothpaste to be nifsel, do you say achshavei in such a case as well? Because I'm putting it into my mouth intentionally, and I might end up with some of the residue remaining behind. So even if it's not technically food, there might be achshavei on that as well. There's a discussion brought in Shulchan Aruch about ink, using ink that has in it chaimetz of Isser has wine vinegar, and a person says brought it. A person might accidentally put the pen in their mouth, even though the ink is not considered a food item anymore. But that itself could be sirach shavei. The Rama brings its lahakol there as well because it's nice and tam of gam and it's into the mixture. But you know, but these are the questions that come up over here when it comes to if a person can get. I think Mary Price was going to discuss a little bit more about toothpaste. Okay, question. But if a person could get kosher Pesach toothpaste or one that are on a reliably approved list, so then it's definitely advisable.
Shreifer Gerstner, very fascinating, interesting shiur. I'd like to call Rabbi Price. We received various questions, and we made groups of questions that Rabbi Price will address. Okay, the first group, the question is it? Some of it Rabbi Gerson touched on, but I guess Rabbi Price will elaborate. Do vitamins need to be kosher l'Pesach? If yes, are Frida kosher l'Pesach? And is there a difference between taking liquid medicines or tablets on Pesach? If there is, please explain the difference.
Right, okay, so as I said, I think Rabbi Gerson touched certainly on the fundamentals and also on some of the practical questions about the vitamins. I guess there's various kosher certified Frida may be just a popular question. There's Maxi Health and there's other certified vitamins too. I'm not sure how much I can be moisif, except it's certainly not in terms of the fundamentals, in terms of the guidelines and how to think about it, but just in terms of what the actual ingredients are usually used, Rabbi Gerstin mentioned that. Do I need to speak louder? Yeah, sorry. Just to give a sense of how the vitamins are made, how they're formulated, there's an extremely for the vitamin to have its effect, there's an extremely small amount of vitamin that's used for it to be potent. There's far less than Bittel. It's probably 1 in 3,000, 5,000 in order for that, let's say it's vitamin A or vitamin D or what have you, to have its proper effect for the person. The rest of the thing is these inactive ingredients. For the most part, the inactive ingredients, I can't actually think of one that would likely be chametz offhand, referring to the inactive ingredients. the starches that are typically used in this country are cornstarch, typically. In other countries, in other parts of the world, there's a lot of starches, maltodextrins. These are the things that are used in the inactive part of the pills or the vitamins or the tablets or what have you. Those certainly can be chametz, and so what we're saying here about is really just a local. We're fortunate to have a lot of corn in this country, and so these inactive ingredients are often formulated, whether it's the alcohol or whether it's the starch that's used as a carrier for the actual vitamin, is typically going to be a non-chametz ingredient. So I think really the best way to deal with this question about vitamins, especially considering, as Rabbi Gerson mentioned, it's not the Davar Pashut that it's mutter, even if it's in a pill form. It seems to be, you know, disagreement among poskim whether that's okay, whether it's achshavei or not. So it's really a shaila if a person feels that it's important for him to take a vitamin, even though there's certainly a makom b'machmir, if it were to be considered chametz, it's worth asking. You could ask me, or you could ask someone who would, you know, might have some havana of these ingredients, whether there's in fact chametz. So in terms of the Frida, which is how the question was formulated, are Frida vitamins okay for Pesach? I really think it's a question you have to don each individual vitamin, if it's important for the person to take it, or the person wants to take it. So it's a shaila. You've asked a shaila, and then we could try to work with each one. So I don't think there's a blanket way of answering that question. So that's with regards to the vitamin. Did we speak about the liquid? Or?
Right.
So the liquid, I just want to reinforce one point that Rabbi Gerstin also mentioned. The triaminic fever reducer for children is something that we looked into, and I just want to give a brief background in what's involved in looking into that. Just one brief historical point. Tylenol had this children's medicine, which was very effective and also very popular, and many people used it. And it was always sort of de facto, even though it wasn't certified kosher, the vice president of Johnson & Johnson, the former, he's now retired, but he's from, and had sort of, in his own quiet way, had always sort of secured, glycerin is one of the main ingredients in these fever reducers, and in the Tylenol as well. So in his own really very modest way, he secured that it would always be a kosher glycerin that they would be using to formulate the Tylenol children's medicine. He had told us, and he had told others in different agencies, that this is what he was doing, even though it wasn't certified. But we were able to, besides the fact that he's trustworthy, we were able to verify, because the glycerin, in fact, was coming from an OU-certified glycerin supplier. So I was able to speak to the mashgiach, and he said, yes. He spoke to the company, who are you selling? Are you selling? This company has kosher and non-kosher glycerin, and they said, you have one customer is Johnson & Johnson. Are you selling the kosher or the non-kosher? The kosher is only going to Johnson & Johnson. Very good. So we were periodically able to verify that the that Tylenol was kosher. It happened, unfortunately, that there was a recall of the Tylenol. I think it was sometime early 2010, and they had to put themselves back together again, and they started using they outsourced their Tylenol production to a company in Canada, and they started using non-kosher glycerin. So, again, I don't want to say that it's us. There are certainly poskim that say if a child needs medicine, he could use whatever he can get. I mean, if he has the non-kosher, he should use the non-kosher. Rabbi Gerstein mentioned 103, 104. I've heard lower, you know, threshold for temperatures, like even 101, because a child is in sakana, and you give him whatever he needs. So I don't want to say that that's not true. But if we have a kosher version that would, let's say, medically just as effective, that would be great. I think no one would disagree with that. So the triaminic is a fever reducer. Again, I'm certainly not a physician and don't have any experience in health, but in the case where it would be as effective as the Tylenol, it would be great, because the triaminic is under the OU, and it's kosher for year-round because it uses the kosher glycerin. Now, in terms of the Pesach issue, everything there is really is kosher for Pesach as well. The worst is kidneyus, and I think it does have kidneyus in it. But I just briefly want to talk about the flavors. We looked at the flavors that are used. There's bubblegum and there's grape flavor. The flavors are composed of many different components, and I just want to talk about it briefly because I think it's important for people to understand it. Many of those chemicals are what we call a chemical compound, or the flavors are made by two chemicals which are put together to make a third chemical. So the way that it works is that you'll have chemical A and you'll have chemical B, and you put the two together and you'll get a third thing which doesn't taste either like A or B. So this is meisim b'chol yoyim in the flavor industry, where you could do that, make such a reaction. If chemical A is chametz and chemical B is not chametz, and you put the two together to make something which tastes like neither A nor B, so you could say that that's acceptable. It's not a problem for Pesach, because there's a concept that called zeves agarim. You have something which can't accomplish a certain, by itself, it can't accomplish a certain tachlis, but when it put together with something else, which itself single-handedly would not be able to produce the desired result, and you put the two together, you have a concept called zeves agarim, which lechatchila is not allowed to, a person's not allowed to do it, but if you have it and it's been done, so then that's okay. So we had to, just sort of before we were comfortable saying triaminic fever reducer for children is okay, we did do a little bit of eon into the flavors besides all the other ingredients. And at worst, if one of these chemical A or B would have been chametz, then it would still have been acceptable because of this din of zeves agarim. Again, that's most of the time it was very difficult to determine whether, let's say, it was chemical A, was the chashash of chametz, and chemical B was for surely not chametz. Again, it would even be just a suffix on chemical A, but that's how we went through the issue of the flavors on the triaminic fever reducer. So anyway, that's the one that we're sort of promoting for the liquid chewables.
Okay, turning to baby foods. Do baby foods need to be kosher Pesach? If yes, which are kosher Pesach? And related to that, are there any kosher Pesach milk alternatives for children who are allergic or intolerant of milk?
So the first question is, does baby food need to be kosher Pesach? Yes, it should be kosher Pesach. There's one thing that we and it should be certified for Pesach. I think the Gerber's vegetables that are actually, they're not certified for Pesach, but they're fine for Pesach. So that's important for people to know. I mean, I guess people could prepare their own vegetables for their children or their babies. Maybe sometimes it's not that easy to do. So the vegetables are okay. The fruits are contain citric acid, which is most likely kidneyous, but we're, you know, it's better to just prepare your own fruits or get a, you know, something which is Pesach certified for the baby foods for the, but otherwise baby foods should certainly be Pesach certified. The second question was the milk. Yeah, so that's a very, very popular question. A lot of children, a lot of adults also are milk intolerant, but children have a heter for kidneyous, and the products that we're sort of endorsing or promoting really for alternatives to milk is what kids generally take as an alternative is the soy milks or the rice milks. And then now there's a product, I guess it's been around, almond milk as well. The rice milks are, there's a lot of, none of these are OUP certified. It's some sort of in theory or in potential. We have an OUP for Oakley kidneyous. I don't really know how much it's really become manifest in the world yet. But the rice milks, by and large, just with an OU, should be okay if they're unsweetened. And some of them don't have flavors. They're called the rice milks or original, and there's different what they call private label. There's ShopRite, and there's one rice milk that people should be careful not to use, which is called Rice Dream. I'm not going to get into all the nitty gritty of it, but it has an enzyme called a beta amylase, which is a barley enzyme, which sort of sweetens the rice starch and makes it into a rice slurry, and they can make it into a rice milk at that point. So that is, one could make a compelling argument that beta amylase is a mimid, and it sort of is responsible for the final product and is not butyl, and therefore, ideally, one should avoid the rice stream products. But the other rice milks are okay. Soy milks, by and large, I mean, almost without exception, unless you go to Chinatown or some ethnic area, have what's called a masking flavor. It's very difficult to drink soy milk it's very difficult for us to drink soy milk without sort of being slightly repulsed by it. So they all have what's called a masking taste to mask the off taste of the soy. And then a lot of them have the vanilla. And so these flavors are extremely complicated, and there are various cheshbonos why it should be okay. But I guess we're sort of not really pushing the soy milks because they're loaded up with these flavors, which are difficult to sort of evaluate, and for various reasons they're difficult to evaluate, partly because of the complexity, partly because they may not be completely under our certification, etc. Yeah.
From a mimid issue exclusively, if one bought it before Pesach, would you be saying that you could do vitriol at that point, same way people buy water beforehand? I'm just focusing on the Deborah Mimid aspect.
Right. Well, in general, it's a good question. If the bitl can take place before Pesach, I mean, which it can, and if you purchase it, there's post going to say that you should purchase it before Pesach. If it's too much to get into in terms of the detail, a very important question. But just to keep it simple, something which is mimed something else, it's not bitl. So in Shulchan Aruch and Tafman Beisef, hey, it talks about Gevinah, it talks about other products which are Humad Al Yidei Chametz. So it's not Batel. So buying it before Pesach is not going to help you because it's not Batel. How that works out with rice stream is an interesting question. We'll maybe not get into the details. But so anyway, and then finally, so there's the rice milks are really the best with the, you have a question? Oh, the rice milks are really the best, as long as they're unflavored and maybe even unsweetened. Soy milks are not so great, but if someone has a very difficult situation, it's worth pursuing because there's probably some leeway. And then there's almond milk, which it's not even kidneyous, which is great. And there's Almond Breeze has a product which is available here at Kosher Connection. I guess if it's sweetened, it doesn't have a flavor, so maybe there's a Milo with that almond milk. So children have a lot of different alternatives if they don't want to drink milk. And there's actually some yogurts that we've looked into as well, but that's there's a tzarech, you could discuss it. Yeah.
Okay. As far as toothpaste goes, if, of course, if it has a hechsher, that's the best thing. But are there any toothpaste you could recommend that don't have a kosher paste attached in their kosher paste?
Yes, I think Rabbi Gerson mentioned we just discussed this really in anticipation of this presentation. We're looking a little bit more into. I'm sorry, I'll speak louder. The Tams of Maine product. Again, just a little bit of the nitty gritty into toothpastes. And again, there are poskim that say it's on eichel, and I'm not here to represent what the halacha is. But they're formulated with. Many are formulated with glycerin, the Colgate and Crest, and not every product is formulated with glycerin, but some of them are, and that's very likely not kosher for year-round. If an alternative to glycerin is something called sorbitol, which is most likely kidneyous and has its own sensitivities as well. There's something called xylitol, which is also performs the same functions as the sorbitol or the glycerol. I use glycerol as interchangeably with the word glycerin because it's the same thing. It's just two ways of referring to it. Xylitol comes from wood, by and large. There's another way of making it from corn cobs. Tams of Maine formulates some of their products just with xylitol. Some of them are formulated with sorbitol. I spoke to them on Friday afternoon just to confirm, and then I spoke to the fellow who handles. So the xylitol that's being supplied to Tams of Maine is also under the OU. I spoke to the fellow who handles the xylitol company. He told me, yes, it's from wood. They have a backup supplier that makes it from corn cob, but we're comfortable. This is not on our website or anything like that. We've just been thinking about the last 48 hours. But the Tams of Maine, I think, is if one thinks that it's appropriate to be machmir with toothpaste, the Tams of Maine, I think, is really the best. The lists, I think, I spoke to a dentist on Shabbos. He said, I think it says Colgate or Crest or what have you. I'm sure that they did their research. The mile over here is that it's not based sort of on calling a company and speaking to their technical people or their customer service representative. Here we have a mashgiach who goes to Tams of Maine, confirms firsthand that, yes, it's just everything what they represent.
It's
true.
OU
it's under the OU, so it's all year round, and we also have mashgiachim at their suppliers. So it's a very sort of ideal situation with this. So we felt that, but it might be, sort of even bigger mile to look at the ones for the ones that are formulated with xylitol.
Are gel caps permitted all year round and on Pesach?
I guess when we talk about gel caps, we distinguish between hard gel and soft gel. The soft gel caps are made with gelatin, which the OU and most contemporary poskim are machmir to say it's usher. It's usually coming from Chazer. Both the poskim at the OU say people should not take the soft gel caps. The hard gel, I think I think Rav Schechter has a little bit more. Yeah, they both say that they're fine. For Achila, the hard gel caps are fine. So I guess that's there's something called capsule gel, by the way, which is a beautiful thing. The gel caps had always been sort of problematic from an ingredient perspective. There's a company called Capsule Gel, and it says it on the products, what the capsule is, the brand of the capsule. Capsule Gel is under the OU. And I looked at the ingredients. There's no, it's not a, Pesach certified company, but there's no chametz or even kidney as anything formulated to use to make the actual capsule. So it's a good piece of information to know.
Are Tums kosher for Pesach without a Pesach hasher?
I saw this question. I don't know. I mean, it's not, Tums is not under the OU, so I don't know.
Okay. Then I
imagine it's kidneyous, but I think that if there's starches in it, but
Here's a question about balance, vanilla,
Pediasure.
Pediasure permitted for a baby on Pesach for weight gain purposes.
It's fine.
Okay. Do pet foods need to be kosher for Pesach? If yes, are there any which are kosher for Pesach?
Yes, pet foods need to be kosher for Pesach because, chametz is iser hana, and you can't, not supposed to feed your dog chametz, or your fish or what have you. Yes, it should be. We don't have a list of kosher pet foods. The Starkei has I noticed on their list, they have pet foods that they looked into, so you could ayin shom if you want some information. Also, some good eitzes about sort of how to get your dog or fish to sort of slowly habituate itself before Pesach to this new diet. So you might want to start, I guess, now if you want to get your pet prepared emotionally and physically for the new diet on Pesach.
Do lips...
What? Yeah.
Do lipsticks need to be kosher pesach? If yes, which ones are acceptable?
I think Rabbi Gerson touched on this also, but lipsticks, it's a question whether it's an oichel or whether there's it's hard to say that there's achshavei on it. I mean, the person doesn't really want it in his mouth. Sometimes sort of inevitably maybe some will get in over a certain amount of time. I looked at some formulas for how to make lipstick. It's a sort of a year-round shaila on lipsticks. If a person wanted to think about lipstick being a kashrus problem, it would be more likely to be a kashrus problem year-round. I don't know if there's really chametz formulate put into it's possible from the things that I saw that alcohol could be used, but alcohol, as we've said several times now, assuming that the lipstick is made in the United States, would likely be not chametz anyway. So I should say, though, it is important. I think Rafelski suggests people use kosher lipsticks. I don't know what they are. I don't know what kosher lipsticks are. I'm sure they exist. And Rebel Schechter is Mekel. So.
Okay, one last question. Last Sunday, when Asko U Outreach met with the Sephardic community in Brooklyn, both of the OU Poskim, Rav Schechter and Belsky, warned of the dangers of assuming that kitniyot products are inherently kosher Pesach. This past week, there was much discussion concerning rice products. Can you share with us what your research has found concerning this issue?
Okay, it happens a very interesting issue. Rabbi Grossman formulated in terms of the Sephardi community. The question is as follows, but it's relevant to us, to Ashkenazim. I should say maybe there's Sephardim here, but it's relevant to Ashkenazim as well in the following way. There's Sephardim eat rice on Pesach, and it's actually even a milah for them to eat rice, according to their minug. The question is, can they use enriched rice? We're talking about white enriched rice. When you take brown rice, you make it white, you have to polish it, you take off the bran, and in the process of making it from brown to white, it also loses many of its vitamins. And the United States requires on white rice that it be enriched, and you have to restore some of these vitamins which are lost in that milling process. You have to restore some of these vitamins. So the question is, in putting these vitamins back into the white rice, is there any shilas of chametz? That's the real issue for the Sephardi community, but it's a question for us as well. As I said, you have many people in the Ashkenazi community who have heterim for eating kidneys. And the question is, can they eat enriched rice, or do they have to look for specifically non-enriched rice, whether that be brown rice or imported rice, or what have you? Is a very, very sort of detailed question. I'll just say it sort of as briefly as possible. Both technically and halachically, there's a lot of issues involved. It basically comes down to this: the big rice producers, Carolina and Uncle Ben's and Goya. Goya is not a producer, but they have their brand on their brand name is on another producer. They don't buy vitamins and put the vitamins into their rice. What they do is they go to a supplier of what's called a vitamin premix, and that company buys the vitamins themselves and they mix it together, and then they sell this little packet it's a box of the vitamin premix, and it gets sent to the rice. It gets sent to the people at Uncle Ben's or Carolina. That's how the industry works in general. If you see cereal and they have all these vitamins, these cereal companies are buying it from these vitamin premix companies who figure everything out and then sell them the premix, and they just add the premix to their cornflakes or their Cheerios or whatever product it's going into. Fortunately, for this inquiry, all the rice producers are buying it from one specific vitamin premix manufacturer who, Baruch Hashem, is also under the OU. There's four vitamins that go into these enriched rice. There's niacin. I have 2 minutes, and I'll try to get this done in 2 minutes. There's niacin. There's folic acid. What? Thiamine. Yeah, thiamine was the big one. And there's iron. Iron's not a vitamin. It's iron's iron. This vitamin premix company buys vitamins from a company who makes thiamine all day, and they get iron from someone who makes iron all day, and they get niacin from a company that makes niacin, etc. And then they buy it, and then they take these vitamins and they mix it with a carrier. which is, let's say, cornstarch. So then they have these four suppliers, and they take these vitamins in, and they mix it with the carrier, and then this is how it works. You take this vitamin premix, you send it to the rice producer, and this is the proportion that they. I mentioned earlier how small amount of vitamin goes a long way. They take the proportion is it comes in these 50 pound boxes. Okay, but what they do is they sort of meter the vitamin premix into the rice at a ratio of 3/10 of a pound of the vitamin premix to 1,000 pounds of rice. And the premix is 50% carrier. You know, it's cornstarch just to, you know, make it uniformly distributed among the rice. So it's really like a 1 to 5,000, 6,000 ratio from vitamin to actual rice. And it's just a powder, which is kind of surprising to me. It's just a powder which is mixed into the rice. There's no liquid or something in getting it to affix the vitamins to the rice. It's just a question of probability. Somewhere in any given sample of rice, you'll have some particle of this premix, which you probably can't even see, but it's floating around somewhere. And because there's, you know, in any given sample that you'll have some particles of vitamin premix, which has been this 3/10 of a pound has been uniformly distributed over 1,000 pounds of rice, so you'll finally find it. Okay. It just happens, again, that the instructions often say don't wash the rice, because if you wash the rice before you cook it, you'll lose the nutrients. Because I said there's no mechanism to actually get the particles onto the rice. There's no adhesive. Fine. The vitamins, there's these four vitamin sources. There's one of the vitamins, three of them are really no shaila. The way that they're produced is very complicated, but there's no shaila of chametz. One of them has this very interesting question, and I'll just mention it briefly if I can. It's very interesting halachically, and could probably be a whole discussion. One of the companies that makes the thiamine, which is, I think, vitamin B1, it uses a solvent in the process. They buy a bunch of different chemicals, and in these chemicals which they buy are powder. And in order to sort of get the reaction to go, they have to put it into a liquid. That liquid is ethanol. It's actually a compound from ethanol, but let's, for the purpose of the discussion, we'll assume it's ethanol. And I spoke to the mashgiach. This company's not under the OU. It's under another agency, but they're extremely cooperative and helpful. Tell me everything that goes on there. This ethanol is sourced from various different suppliers. It's in China, and one of the suppliers is a chametzdika supplier of the ethanol. In fact, the ethanol, they'll buy the feedstock for the ethanol will be whatever the cheapest feedstock is. So whether it's sweet potato or corn or sugar or wheat, you know, whatever, it's seasonal, whatever could be the cheapest. So that's what they'll do. So they take this thing, which is a chash chametz, we'll say, because it could be from wheat, and they use that as a solvent, and then they make the reaction go, and then they centrifuge off all liquid, and then they dry it, which further removes all the liquid, and then they centrifuge it again, and then they heat it again. So at the end of the day, it's just this powder, and all of the ethanol has been removed. And then they have this thiamine, this vitamin B1, and they send it to this company in the United States, which puts it into the vitamin premix. Now, just halachically speaking, the only real question is, you apply a concept, we have a concept of efshel esochto. As efshel esochto, we paskin is aser, mechaber paskin is that in Yerodea, but there's a question if you consider it heter, so you say efshel esochto is mutter, but if you have, okay, I'm not going to get into all the details here, but that's really the question, so this one particular vitamin goes into this vitamin premix. It has sort of flirts with this question of chametz at a certain level. I'm not sure it's even as bad. I don't know if it sounds bad or good the way I described it, but it's not as simple, and it's more complex, and the complexity works in the favor of it being mutter. And in the end of the day, certainly for the Sfardim, someone from our staff had spoke to a Rav Avadia felt it was fine for Sfardim to use the enriched rice. There's reasons why probably will be okay for Ashkenazim as well. In a situation where they had prepared the white rice, the enriched rice, it's probably still better to have unenriched rice for Pesach if a person's eating rice on Pesach. So anyways, that's the background to that question.
I mean, the Paiskim have said that it's, of course, as they do in Eretz Yisrael, it's better to have rice, even for Eichle Kitnius, under a Hashgacha LePesach, and maybe our talk last week in Brooklyn will bring this about. I just want to point out one thing before we close. Rabbi Gersten said that there's many a terem to take pills that you use all year round. I think I'm correct in saying that even if a person uses pills based on all that terem that Rabbi Gersten enumerated, but since during the year his hands could have touched chametz before he took the pill out of his pill box, that you should take, you should get from the pharmacy before Pesach a new bottle of these medications which didn't come in contact with chametz. And Rabbi Price says,
but I didn't speak to the, I think people, some people are talking about with lipstick as well, to get a new one.
That a lipstick to also to get a new one that wasn't used all year round. If anybody has any further questions, if you have it on an index card with your email, fax number, we didn't have a chance to answer them today, but we will answer it from the office. Thank you very much, and a Chag Kosher v'Sameach.